War and rumors of war. Iran, Saudi Arabia, the United States. It is time to talk about it, but not in the way you're expecting. And we're going to do that in podcast 832, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, it's finally spring in Minnesota. We just had our first 80-degree day and it's May, what, 16th? So it takes a long time to warm up after a harsh, cold winter. And you may walk around your house as you're raking leaves and getting ready for summer and say, boy, there are things that I would like to do with this house. And you may have dreams about a new bathroom or a new kitchen, or I'm seeing a lot of houses in the town that I live in where they're taking the upstairs and putting in a master suite. The other thing is I had a young person, a millennial, say to me just recently, the price for new houses is very high. So if you have equity in your house, maybe you're thinking about using the equity to add on or to build a new basement or something to that effect, or even finish the garage. So if you want to do that, whatever your dreams, to build your dream, you need a builder who's going to be by your side from start to finish so that your expectations are met. And I want to recommend Whitetail Builders, because for Whitetail, the process is just as important as the end result. And that would be Randy Grabo at Whitetail Builders. They're online at whitetailbuildersinc.com. There's a contact page there, and you could leave your name and number and tell Whitetail your dreams. People rave about Randy. So you can call Randy Grabo on his personal phone at 612-282-8801, 612-282-8801. Whitetail, again, is focused on the details, and they will be with you every step of the way. Again, whitetailbuildersinc.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page of the Bob Davis Podcasts. You'll see some of the work that they've done. If you go to their site, there's lots of pictures of what they've done. And again, people who use Whitetail have really raved about the service and the final result. Whitetail Builders, Inc. of Andover, Minnesota. Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams. I appreciate people who are liking and sharing and favoriting, especially sharing on social media when I post a podcast. You can get the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can also subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher.com. TuneIn works with Alexa. If you have Alexa, you just say, Alexa, search for thebobdavispodcasts.com, and then you'll have it. It works with TuneIn. I find that Spotify works better. Best with Android devices. We are on Spotify, Spreaker.com, and BlogTalkRadio.com. And again, right off the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. So for the last few weeks, particularly in the last 2 weeks in podcast time in April of 2019 and May of 2019, Iran has been in the news. The United States just recently sent a fleet to the Persian Gulf. Non-essential personnel have been ordered to leave Iraq. I'll talk more about that later. The Saudis and the UAE credit drone attacks on pipelines and shipping to Iran, reportedly using Houthi rebels in Saudi Arabia. There's already been counterstrikes for these attacks by Saudi Arabia. So let me clarify what this is saying. It's saying that our allies, the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates, say that Iran is activating Houthi rebels in Saudi Arabia to attack shipping and oil interests in Saudi Arabia and the UAE. There have already been counterstrikes for those attacks by Saudi Arabia. Now, most people do not want a deep dive on foreign policy issues. They want people to tell them what they're supposed to think. Even if they don't think that's what they want, that's usually what they want. We're going to, unfortunately, have to submerge ourselves briefly in the details of this particular issue because it's potentially serious, very serious, and also political at the same time. If you don't have the stomach for this sort of thing, I can't imagine why you would listen to this podcast. But if you don't have the stomach for the details, in other words, people get nervous listening to complex details these days. Well, if you don't have the stomach for it, I haven't got much sympathy for you, because the devil is in the details. And every time we have one of these major foreign policy issues, as you'll hear in this podcast, it's really important to go through some of the details. This is not a complete list of details, but it will get us where we need to go, and then I'll sum it all up. So At issue is what any normal observer would call a non-proliferation agreement with Iran dating back to the Obama administration, and it is called the JCPOA. It is thought of as a treaty by some. It isn't. You might hear people say, well, we've got a treaty with them, or we did. No, a treaty has to be ratified by the U.S. Senate. There's a procedure, constitutional procedure for this. What is often done are communiques are issued, and those form the basis of agreements. Iran, the U.S., and other parties signed on to a communique, which is basically a letter called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran and the five permanent members of the U.N. Security Council, China, France, Russia, and the U.K., and the U.S., are all signatories to this, this letter. It is a plan for Iran to eliminate its stockpile of medium-enriched uranium in exchange for the lifting of economic sanctions, which have been in effect from Western Europe and the United States since the 1970s and 1980s with the emergence of Khomeini and the revolution in Iran. So what does that mean? Well, if you want a nuclear weapon, you have to get at least to medium-enriched uranium, which is about 20%. This is hard to get to. Once you are there, it is much easier to fully enrich to nuclear material. My understanding is most of Iran's uranium was enriched to about 4%. Some people say it's 20%. I don't know. The IAEA says about 4%. In 2016, now President Trump campaigned on his criticism of the JCPOA, which President Obama had championed. As late as September 2018, so it would have been last September, the IAEA says Iran was adhering to this agreement. Because it is a letter of understanding and not actually a treaty, the Trump administration was legally able to withdraw from it, and it has been steadily increasing sanctions against Iran since. For example, end of the waivers on Iran's oil exports of about 1.2 million barrels a year has caused that number to plummet. Iran recently announced it could begin to walk away from the agreement and start enriching uranium again. So the sanctions are enough, have enough bite that Iran is starting to rattle the saber and say, we're going to walk away from the agreement and start enriching uranium again. They claim, and I'll get into this a little bit later on, that they can get to 20% or more relatively quickly. And so what this does is puts them back on the path to a nuclear weapon, which many people have said Iran is the most dangerous country in the world with a nuclear weapon because of the tinderbox nature of the Middle East, which I'll also get to. So what this, just as a quick side, they also opened up a new enriching facility not covered in the agreement, but the IAEA has said they would still know if Iran was enriching beyond the limits of the agreement, which we have waived. You may not like the IAEA. I certainly have my issues with them. But remember, they were the ones that said they couldn't say for sure whether or not Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. They were never found in Iraq. And so the thing about the IAEA is no one listened to them back in 2003, and maybe we should have. The U.S. most recently announced yet more sanctions, particularly focused on Iran's steel, aluminum, and copper industries, which account for about 10% of Iran's exports. These sanctions, as well as previous sanctions, have negatively affected the Iranian economy already. Inflation is up, GDP is down. Keep in mind, Iran's economy had been improving during the time sanctions dating back to the 1970s and 80s had been waived. Now it's sliding back, which is part of the reason this story has exploded recently in the headlines due to recent attacks on Gulf states alleged to have originated with Iranian-backed rebel groups, as I said. So here's where we are now. And one might wonder, why is this generating a great deal of coverage in the media? That is the main reason I wanted to do this podcast. So we all know that the Middle East is a cauldron, armed to the teeth and home to countries that are each other's sworn enemies at minimum. From the Persian Gulf southeast, more than 1,000 miles across northern Africa, you have Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco. Northeast, hundreds of miles to Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, not to mention Israel, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the war in Syria and Iraq near the Persian Gulf, powerful militias in Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Tunisia, and Libya, Yemen, oil-rich countries like Oman and the Emirates, west across Iran itself to Afghanistan and Pakistan, south to Somalia and other parts of West Africa, a world in which, I should do that like one of the movie guys, a world in which political instability is the norm. For example, the ongoing civil wars and coups in places like the Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and others, including even Lebanon, where the government is weak and the militias run things. So when you hear people in the media mentioning these places and talking about Syria or Saudi Arabia or Iran as though they are isolated areas, they are not. For example, Turkey is a member of NATO. Tunisia and Libya are right across the Mediterranean from Greece, Italy, Spain, and Eastern Europe. What happens in this region involves France, Russia, Turkey, Italy, Spain, Greece, and of course the United States, increasingly China and India. Did I mention Russia? Yes. Immigration to Europe from Africa, Iraq, Syria, and other parts of this world have negatively affected the major Western European politics and society, and some could argue our own. Finally, for more than 100 years, especially the United Kingdom and France have had dealings in the region after World War I. So around 1920, they started to develop the oil reserves in the region. Some would argue that the emergence of the Sir Lawrence of Arabia and the various tribes of Arabia as a military power in World War I signaled the end of the Turkish, the Ottoman Empire. And then when we got to World War II, the Nazis attempted to drive across northern Africa to link up with Japan. A lot of people don't know this. In the Middle East, the idea was they were going to lock down the world's oil supplies, opposed by the Allies. And there was an awful lot of action in 1942 and 1943 in that part of the world, to which at the end of the war, in the post-war and Cold War era, when the United States and the United Kingdom developed client states like Saudi Arabia and Iran, the idea was to block Soviet expansion, especially Iran, when Iran was in the Western satellite, when Iran was essentially a Western client state or satellite, not to mention the creation of Israel in 1948. Added to all this, the religious schism in the Muslim world back close to 1,000 years ago, between Shia and Sunni, which we've heard so much about. Iran is Shia, Saudi Arabia is Sunni, and so on. Economic interests, political interests, religious interests, all in sort of a crazy kind of melange that it's like mixing all sorts of flammable fuels together. The fact is that this part of the world is a choke point for shipping and oil through the Suez Canal to the Mediterranean Sea and thus Southern Europe and Western Europe. This is also the literal cradle of civilization, the place where almost everyone today on the planet came from, and that our own religious ideas are rooted in this region. So it is very powerful as an emotional tag and pull for almost everyone on the planet. When they start talking about the mysterious threats and pulling diplomatic personnel and U.S. citizens from Iraq and sending fleets to the Gulf, you get the pictures of planes flying off carriers and everything else on the TV news, and you get all of this emotional rhetoric. When countries like Saudi Arabia start talking about defanging Iranian military capabilities, when armed groups start attacking oil facilities and ships with drones, etc., it's a big deal, and we should all pay attention. And if you're not aware of the details, well, then you're basically going to be really victimized by the rhetoric. And I want to talk about this, and this is the core of what I want to talk about in the second half of this podcast. So there's a revolution in this country. It's called the payment processing revolution. It helps companies get paid faster. If you're in business for yourself, you know that getting paid faster, in other words, clients being able to pay you on the spot, is better for cash flow. My payment processor is ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D at ReliaFund.com. And they're great because they can integrate any payment processing system with your systems. For example, they can integrate with QuickBooks so that I can send out invoices that say pay now. You click on it and you can pay your bill now. I use ReliaFund to process checks because I have a lot of clients that want to pay with checks. I direct them to the ReliaFund button on my website, and they can enter their own information. It's secure. They are technology focused. There's no long-term contracts. If you're developing back office stuff, or if you're developing a website and you need payment processing, I can recommend ReliaFund. If you call them, you're going to talk to a human being. 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, or click on the ReliaFund banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. That takes you to their website. And you can tell them what kind of challenges you're facing, and they will get back to you. That's how I found ReliaFund. So I've given you a very light, quick course on the situation. It's not complete. I can't emphasize that enough. And I am almost sorry to do it because most people don't want to hear it. My experience in talk radio has been people always say, don't ever say policy, don't talk about policy, don't discuss foreign policy or economic policy, because people have no idea what you're talking about. It literally is like another language to most people. The reason for this is most of the media in this country will wait until there is a crisis, and then they'll try to give you histories. But the histories that they give you will basically be on for television, or they will be commentators who are grinding a political axe. So advocate journalism, so to speak, and commentators who don't know really other than what they've read or seen. The worst part is the television stuff on cable television, which again features the pictures of planes over and over, loops of planes taking off from aircraft carriers and that kind of stuff, stock footage, and people who don't know anything going on about whether we should do it or shouldn't do it. And once you get to that point, it's a binary argument. It is much more complex than that, and I want to talk about that a little bit because I have a little experience with this, because I was doing daily talk shows on 9/11, on through the war in Iraq and its aftermath, and you were always looking for so-called experts who could tell you something, and I was pretty diligent about finding people, in fact, interviewing the National Security Advisor, John Bolton, many times, and I am sorry for not interviewing people on the other side of the fence, although I did talk to a couple. I should have talked to Trudy Rubin, whom I criticized pretty severely at that time. And I fear that this is what we're in for. And I'm sorry to say this too. I fear that this is what we're in for, a repeat of the Iraq thing as part of the Trump election campaign and 2020. You know I'm loath to predict the future. To a certain extent, to get anywhere in this world today, you have to put up a big demonstration. And I think to a degree, putting the fleet into the Persian Gulf and things of that nature, to a certain degree, are brinkmanship to push Iran. But if Iran doesn't want to be pushed, and if they are willing to risk war, well, that's another thing entirely. And if you look at the history of the religious component here in Iran, you know that the Iranian Shiite extremists, Khamenei, who is the actual leader of Iran, not the president, has said that their view is that their religious view is that the end of the world will be brought on by nuclear attacks, and that's one of the reasons they want nuclear weapons. Now, this is very very frightening for people, and it carries the sort of alarmist quality. But I've heard Khamenei say it. It's a matter of public record, the things that he said regarding this. So I think it's something that people have to pay very close attention to, this potential for Iran, as it's currently constituted, to develop nuclear weapons. But one of the things I learned from the experience of being on the radio during the Iraq thing and during 9/11 and everything else is that talk show hosts, people on the radio, commentators, should really never advocate for military action from their perspective. I think it's very dangerous. It's not because I'm an anti-war person. It's not because I don't think Iran is a threat. It's not because I'm a so-called liberal, but because what you think is going to happen when you're advocating for policy, whether it's economic policy or military policy or foreign policy, is usually what doesn't happen. In other words, you think it's going to go this way and you find out that it's going to go a completely different way because what you think is going to happen is not what's going to happen. So you go out and you tell people you should believe this because this is what's going to happen. Well, I don't know what's going to happen and most people don't know what's going to happen. I can tell you if there's an armed conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and other allies in the United States, quote unquote, a coalition, lots of people are going to die and come home damaged, and it's going to have a cost, and we don't know how long the cost or how much the cost is going to be endured. To a certain extent, I was young and dumb enough to get caught up in the so-called facts surrounding the course of action, which was already settled. I certainly understood the idea that we needed to break the mold in the Middle East and reset. That was the whole concept which nobody ever talked about in the Bush administration. They chose the weapons of mass destruction argument in order to bring everybody to the point where they were going to actually approve a resolution to deploy troops and make war on Iraq. As most people know now, war is no joke. And the sad part is politicians use it like they use everything else to build support, yay or nay, standing tall or fighting for peace or fighting for justice in the world, whatever. Now, I am not privy to the meetings with congressional leadership in the White House. I am not sitting on the Iran desk at the CIA or Defense Intelligence, and neither are most of the media. Given the media's predilection to repeat what they are told by someone else, if this Iran thing heats up, we're going to be buffeted by all kinds of emotional rhetoric and little background. And when you have conversations with people, it's going to be, do you think we should? Do you think we should? Or really what it should be is, do you think we should send our young troops to this place to do this thing? And it becomes a binary situation where you're either for or against, and most people don't really know because we simply do not have objective sources in this part of the world anymore. It is too unsafe and expensive for reporters to work it, so you're left with communiques from government agencies and political offices and the reporters who are willing to risk their lives in these complicated and dangerous regions. So here's what I will say. I will say Iran is not Iraq. It is not essentially an endless desert where armored forces can roam freely and engage over wide distances against poorly equipped and led national military forces. It is mountainous. It has a relatively sophisticated military. We're talking about Iran. It is a developed country, about $20,000 a year per capita income, highly educated. And it should go without saying, but I will say it, this is a fact that a war with Iran would be considerably more dangerous in terms of geopolitics because the truth is nobody really cared about Iraq. Yeah, they did, but Iraq is not Iran. Iran has been a client state of the Russians, the Chinese, the United States, and many countries in Europe, including France and the UK, over the years. And of course, Persia is one of the oldest civilizations in the world. At one time, it was Rome before Rome. So in the ancient world, the Persians were, you know, one of the first major civilizations. Now, depending on how hot this gets, every one of these commentators, talk show hosts, bloggers, video content creators, and so on are all going to be beating the drum. This is the beginning of Armageddon. We should do this because the Iranians are bad people. This is necessary for the world to finally solve the problem in the Middle East. There will be a whole bunch of variants, yay or nay, and we will be covered in a firestorm of yakking that will be designed to convince us that we should do this, that, or the other thing. I am not, and you are not, most of the people listening, although unless you're sitting at the Pentagon on the Iran desk, we are not privy to the president's thinking on Iran unless you're in the White House, whether or not he's really willing to go to war with Iran, or if he is saying, I hope we don't, and he's right, or whether he's rattling the saber, or he's listening to John Bolton and other quote-unquote hawks. And we don't know either whether John Bolton is actually right about this or not, or whether other people are right about it. Maybe, maybe not. There is clearly already disagreement within the military community and the diplomatic community on whether Iran is a potential military threat. The British head of forces in the region was sacked recently for saying that there is no, I don't know what these guys are talking about, there is no perceivable threat from Iran at the present time. This is just in the last few days. So what I'm doing is something different, and that is to caution you to be prepared for the onslaught of commentating and to remember this is not a plant in Gary, Indiana or Wisconsin. This isn't a bunch of farmers in the Midwest. This is going to be everybody. This is going to pull in every major nation, and it could potentially be a real significant problem for the United States. You know, I suppose if there's actually war, it could be a big victory, but I don't think so. Not with my experience and not with all of our experience about what happened in Iraq. You know, the president, Bush at the time, had troops in Afghanistan, troops in Iraq, and they had Iran essentially surrounded. And so these were Republican administrations, and as people who are Republicans get pulled into this administration, some of that philosophy that we need to go in and completely overturn the existing structure of government and everything else in the region in order to reset it, is the height of this intervention philosophy, which a lot of people feel that has gotten us into a bunch of trouble. And it's also, to a large degree, the core of the war on terror Republican philosophy circa 2001, 2002, 2003. Am I going to say that it's the wrong strategy? I don't know. I don't personally think that these agreements that these countries sign necessarily keep them from nuclear weapons. We've signed a bunch of agreements with North Korea. In fact, North Korea actually has nuclear weapons and delivery systems, and we have supposedly an agreement with them that says that they're not going to do that. And we don't ever talk about that issue. So, and by the way, the agreement with North Korea is an agreement that President Trump signed after he criticized Obama for signing a letter of agreement with the Iranians. So this is a problem, this nuclear proliferation problem. This is an ongoing problem that the different strains of thought in foreign policy and military policy are struggling to deal with. And it would take me a series of podcasts to detail all of those, and I would have to go online and pull information. I would have to read things, which I don't necessarily trust them as sources, especially opinion pieces, and most of us shouldn't either. My only and final caution in all of this is Trump's shoot-from-the-hip approach politically. If you'll allow me this one criticism, which is usually in service to activating a voting block, this shoot-from-the-hip approach has its charms politically, and usually it has worked for him. When we're talking about domestic issues, I said two things at the beginning of the 2016 election cycle and again in 2018, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to say it again in 2019. Republican voters in particular did not think about what kind of economic policy they wanted, and they did not think about what kind of foreign policy they wanted. So you have a president who shoots from the hip, makes stuff up as he goes along, claims that he's being successful at this, that, and the other thing. That's okay with economic policy, I guess, and people just have to figure out whether it's working or not. I've done podcasts about it, but when it comes to war, when it comes to the potential for miscalculation, in military action, we should really learn from our experience of shooting from the hip as it pertains to the Iraq War. It didn't turn out the way George W. Bush thought it would, and I could argue politically it was the beginning of the end for the Republican Party, because people thought it was going to be 1, 2, 3, get rid of Saddam and come home, and we're still stuck there. So the critics who said you'll be stuck there for 50 years were actually right. What they didn't realize was that the Republican strategy at the time actually called for that. And I actually said that you know, what's going to happen is we're going to end up putting troops in that region in force, and like after the end of World War II, they're going to be there for a long time, and that's going to cause a lot of problems because those people do not want us there. The difference between Europe and the Middle East is, I think it's fair to say that after World War II, European countries wanted the assistance from the United States, and the truth is that we pulled troops out, we left forward defenses in to deal with the Soviets. But our help to Europe came in the form of a Marshall Plan. So there's a lot of details and moving parts to all this. It's just that, you know, don't expect the Democrats really to see clearly on this either, because their entire platform currently consists of handing out free candy and basically hating the president. That's their whole thing. The president's shoot from the hip Twitter approach might just cause him to bumble into a military action in the Persian Gulf, which would be very touch and go. And we have to think about whether or not this is what we really want. And it might be a good time to think about that this time before it goes down rather than after. Now, if you're a pilot and you are heading over to the air show at Oshkosh this summer, I know you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. Alpha Systems has been a sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast for a long time. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator, and it saves pilots' lives. When you get to the EAA, check them out in, I think it's Building 3 or Building C. I can't remember. I've been there 3 or 4 times, and they will be there all day, and there will be 6-7 people deep that are interested in the Alpha AOA. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcasts.com. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thanks for listening to podcast 832, War and Rumors of War with Iran.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on.
Talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to my nation.
In the sky.